Recorded live and with bared midriffs in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, this is So You Think You Can Danica.
Hello and welcome to So You Think You Can Danica. My name is Danica.
And my name is not. It's Devin. Hello.
Hi, Devin.
How are you?
I mean, you know, I'm doing pretty fine.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, how have you been?
I've been all right. Yeah, things have been happening. It's February now.
Mm-hmm.
We are back once again in the illustrious Devin R. Bruce recording studio, aka the living room of my apartment. So I'm hoping no midnight construction happens.
Yeah, that would be weird and loud.
Would not be the first time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but that's not what we're here to talk about.
We're here to talk about dancing?
I mean, I guess.
We're here to talk about the movie Coyote Ugly.
Oh, boy.
Do you remember the early 2000s? Pepperidge Farm does.
Pepperidge Farm remembers? Boy, I gotta say, by the way, for those of you who may be just tuning in for the first time, we put out a poll based on an episode last episode,
mm-hmm.
We were talking, and then somehow during the recording of the episode, you mentioned Coyote Ugly, and we wondered, hey, is that a dance movie? And then your husband texted, it's a dance movie for sure. And then we came up with the idea that we should vote off between Magic Mike and Coyote Ugly to see what movie we should do.
Yes, and that just shared the poll last minute. And got everybody to vote. Because it was close.
It was close for a really long time. Back and forth.
Yeah.
There was a point where Magic Mike was really in the lead.
Yeah.
And then
it just turned right back. And it ended like at 52-48. I mean, it was close.
It was one vote. One vote separated. So whoever you were, oh boy.
Brandon has multiple accounts, so I bet you he voted for
him. Oh, I bet. So basically what we're saying is, Brandon, we are not amused. This is not a dance movie.
It's not a dance movie.
It has some dancing in it. I would say there are two scenes in this movie that I would qualify as dance scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them involve men.
That's true. Okay, except I have to minorly disagree with you.
Okay.
Because you have to count what the coyotes did.
Right, but
there was choreography.
It's true. It's true, but that's my perspective is there's so much cutting in those scenes that I don't really see dancing. I see moves.
There was footwork.
There was footwork, but it's just like cut to footwork. It's like cut to footwork. Cut to the head and shoulders of Tyra Banks. Cut to footwork. Cut to the head and shoulders of another person. It's just like,
Not saying the actresses were doing it.
Yeah,
I'm saying
enough,
there was
enough.
Choreography.
There was choreography, but, and yeah, they would be dance scenes. I don't know. It's not a dance movie. It's not a dance movie.
It's not, but when you said two scenes, that was one of them that I imagined, and then you said both men, and I was like, thrown.
That's fair. Yeah, because, again, because of my brain, the more you cut, the less actual dancing there is.
Okay.
And I've mentioned that before. It's just like you don't see the dancing if it's just frenetic arms, legs, hips, shoulders, just like moving
feet,
and then
feet.
But you're right. There is dancing for sure. But we have gotten way ahead of ourselves. Oh, first impressions of Coyote Ugly.
Wow. Okay. So I'm at of an age where, like, what was it, 2001?
Mm-hmm.
Was, like, my golden times. So all of that trash was my trash, and I haven't seen Coyote Ugly. I've never seen it.
2000.
Oh, 2000, okay.
I thought it was 2001. It's 2000.
It's the millennium, baby.
That's my jam. We all thought the Y2K virus was going to kill us, and instead, we partied real hard.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So now, I enjoyed it in a very different way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I will say, not a good film, and we'll talk about why.
Yep.
But you were wondering if I liked it. I did, but not for the reasons that normal people would like it.
Fair.
Like, everything that was very obviously 2000 and incredibly dated in the year of our Time Lord 2019 was my, like, what's happening? Like, it's just, it came together in such a delightful mess.
Would you say that you liked the aesthetic of the film?
Yes, sorry.
It's okay.
I loved the aesthetic. 2000 was such a great year. Like, it was just, like, it's not good, but it's mine. It's my special trash.
That is 100% okay. The aesthetic of that movie is a big mess. Like, every once in a while, like, even at the beginning, I don't know. We normally go chronologically, but I feel like this is just, like, we'll talk about it.
This movie is a mess, and this podcast is going to be a mess.
All right.
As it deserves.
All right. This is a terrifying experiment.
We've got notes. Whatever.
We've got notes. We can refer back to it. But the scene where, yeah, boy, we're just getting right into it. The scene where she and her friend drive to New York, and it's playing the cover of, what song was it?
Were they doing Unbelievable at that point?
They would do the cover of I Will Survive.
Oh,
remember?
Yeah.
She did I Will Survive in the bowling alley, and then they did a really bad cover of it on the drive into New York. And it was just like, oh, New York is weird and crazy. Let's drive through Chinatown, and guy will dump fish heads on the street. But then there was a crane shot that was really cool, and then there was a worm's eye view shot that was really cool, and I was like, oh, okay, like, this cinematographer is working. And then that cinematographer kept working really hard all movie. No, you can't stop shooting. You can't stop moving. But there were interesting shots in it. He never stopped. He never slowed down, really. Oh, boy.
I think it was trying to make up for the terrible plot and lack of chemistry between the two main leads.
Yeah, I gotta say, they did not have a lot of chemistry.
No, just because you're Australian does not make you a romantic icon person. I'm not really sure what's happening.
I will say, I did enjoy his dance scene other than the rubbing his nipples.
Oh my god. Okay, so he can dance.
Yeah, he's a good dancer.
But, like, I don't know. I have so many problems with Kevin. So many problems.
Well, let's do a little bit of introduction so we can get into it.
Okay. Just in case you haven't seen this wonderful film.
Oh, boy. So, Piper Caribou plays Paribou. I said Paribou. Like, she's a caribou. Piper Caribou plays Violet, who is a young lady who grew up in Jersey. She works at a pizza restaurant, but she's always had dreams of moving to New York to be a songwriter. Her dad's John Goodman.
Who's rad?
Who's super rad. The character is not always super rad, but John Goodman is always rad.
Yeah, like, he gives it his level best.
Oh, 100%. Possibly the best thing about this movie is John Goodman. And then her best friend, Melanie Lynskey.
Oh my god, when I saw Melanie Lynskey's name in the credits, I freaked out. I freaked out because I love her forever. Like, she's still around and she's still amazing.
Yeah, what's she doing right now? She's on
no
some
idea,
medical
but
drama,
it's
I think.
Probably amazing. I should probably check that.
I'll look it up. But okay. Yeah, so yeah, she goes. Well, okay, I'll look it up. You continue the story.
Okay, so they give her the big send off, and she moves to New York, and there's like a cat for some reason that is never talked about, and then so she starts to give out her like her demo tape, and that is a giant failure, and then we learn how New York is very mean and unforgiving.
Yes. By Ellen Cleghorn's sassy black lady receptionist who's just like, please tell me how you want me to help you.
That was a speech.
That was a speech. Ah, Ellen Cleghorn, you are a little too young. I am almost a little too young for Ellen Cleghorn, but I remember her as, honestly, the black lady on Saturday Night Live in the 90s. Because,
yeah,
like,
she probably was the only one.
Yes, and... Yeah, 100% at the time, for sure. But yeah, I just remember Don Pardo going, Ellen Cleghorn! Like, I remember that very distinctly.
Okay. I liked her, and coming from an admin background, I was like, girl, do it. Yes, scare her. She deserves that fear. I had a lot of administrative respect for her.
Yeah. So she's shipping her demos around. She goes to a bar, sees a cute dude schmoozing on ladies.
Yeah.
She asks the bartender who he is, if he is important. Oh, he's Mr. What's his name? Mr.
O'Donnell?
Yes, Mr. Kevin O'Donnell. Mr. O'Donnell, he's the music manager of this bar. Hilarious. He's not. He just works in the back.
Yeah. Let's not shame waitstaff people. There's some shaming going on. We'll talk about that later, too.
There's a little bit of shaming. So, yeah, that's our meet cute. She assumes he's the music supervisor, the music manager of the bar. She finds out later, that he's just a line cook.
And then he follows her home.
And he follows her home. What is it with dudes following ladies home?
For half an hour. It's in the script. She mentions it for half an hour.
Yeah, 20 something blocks, half an hour. They've been, to be fair,
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna do my to be fair because this is a movie, yeah, and movies highlight like the drama and the romance.
All right.
If they had been yelling at each other for half an hour,
mm-hmm,
there is a point where she doesn't not enjoy this. Because I feel like after half an hour, she could have made it very clear or gotten away or whatever. But they're still like playfully flirting with each other after half an hour.
But very poorly.
But yeah, but badly.
I'll give you that, but they are very bad at it.
Yeah, and I remember when Coyote Ugly came out, like, Piper Perabo was supposed to be this big thing.
Yeah.
And I never saw Coyote Ugly until tonight. And I watched it and I went, really?
Yeah.
She was supposed to be, like, the next big thing? She's not terrible. She's just not, like, the new It girl.
No, she's skinny and blonde.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably all they needed then.
Yeah. And I don't even know if she did her own singing. I can look that up to you. Also, the thing that I just liked was Melanie Lynskey is in Castle Rock. That is the thing that she is currently in.
Oh, I feel like I've heard of this.
It's a TV show based on Stephen King's stories, I believe, which is why it's called Castle Rock, because that's where all of his stories are set. Yeah. I don't know if she does her own singing, but yeah, I didn't think she had she was fine. The other guy was fine. They didn't have a ton of chemistry, and their character and his character is not, Kevin's character is pretty, I would, slightly terrible. I wouldn't say fully terrible. I would say slightly terrible.
And I would say he's a giant red flag with an accent.
I agree, but it's the kind of red flag that they put into romantic movies to show that he's like, he's damaged and he's really sweet, but he's got some problems and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I guess that was what was popular and kind of still is.
He's damaged goods.
He's damaged goods. Ugh. But yeah, and then it's just like, then she gets, she's looking, oh, then her apartment gets broken into.
Yeah.
All of her stuff gets smashed.
Trashed.
She's hanging out. Yeah, trashed. She's hanging out at the all-night diner.
Yeah.
The nice diner waiter gives her free pie.
That was actually really sweet, because, like, she looks like she has just had a night, and he understands.
And she's like, how much is the pie? And he looks at her money and goes, it's free. It's on the house.
Yeah.
But that's where she runs into the coyotes.
So there's this table of women that are confident and sexy and loud and boisterous, and they obviously come there a lot because when there's a cool song on the radio, they're like, hey, guy at the counter, we know you, turn this up.
This is my jam, turn it up!
Yeah, and so, like, Tyra Banks straight up starts dancing in a diner, and she's just like, who are these ladies? Mm-hmm. They're so confident, and I want to be them. And then, yeah, so that's where we learn they're the coyotes. And so he gives her a matchbook. Which in itself still feels kind of retro, because I don't know if those things even still exist.
Yeah, matchbooks.
Right? Like, it feels like they should, and they probably do, but as a businesses giving out matchbooks feels very old.
A bar giving out matchbooks does make sense, though, even to this day. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not to this day. To the day of Coyote Ugly, for sure.
To this day,
side note, anytime, like, a matchbook shows up in a movie or a work of fiction, I'm like, open it up, there's a clue. There's a clue written on the inside of the matchbook.
Yeah, there's, like, someone's phone number.
There's always a clue in the matchbook. But yeah, the coyotes are played by Isabella Miko, Tyra Banks, and Bridget Moynihan, who I did not recognize.
No, because usually, like, most of the time she's got much shorter hair. And yeah. I knew the name, and then when she showed up anyway, my brain went, nope, these are two separate people. And then at the end, I'm like, nope, they're not. Why? Mm.
Yeah.
No, she looks so different.
She looks very different. Tyra looks like how I remember Tyra looking.
Yeah.
Because I remember Tyra from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Mm, okay, okay.
And she looks pretty much like that. She doesn't look like Tyra now, because nobody looks the same 19 years later. But it's like, oh yeah, I remember when Tyra was like really skinny. And then I don't know who the other lady is. I don't think I'd seen her in anything before.
No. I liked
her. She was sweet. I feel like a better rewrite of that movie would have given at least half of her part to Tyra.
Yeah, I still feel like they couldn't have afforded her, even like, because Tyra would have been the biggest star. So maybe they were like, maybe we can only afford you for these many screen minutes or whatever.
There was not enough Tyra in that movie. No. For sure. I mean, when she was in it, you were like captivated by Tyra's gyrations and her beauty, but like she didn't do a ton in that movie.
Okay. I'm just breezing through the what's her faces, the blondes, whatever. Names don't matter. They do, but I'm terrible. Okay. I'm sitting up. So she was like 18 and landed this role.
Whoa. Oh, right.
And she was a ballerina before.
Oh.
She went to the National Ballet School of Warsaw at like 10.
Wow.
So, yeah, she did some.
Oh, she's done a bunch of stuff.
TV and stuff. And yeah.
We will see her again. She is in Step Up All In.
Okay, well, that's good.
She's in Step Up All In. She's in, I recognize her, I think I recognize her from Deadwood, because she's in Deadwood.
Oh, okay, I didn't look up everything, I was just trying to look up her bio.
Yeah.
It's not working.
She's also in Save the Last Dance, too. I definitely remember her from Deadwood. Yeah, okay, that's where I recognize her from.
Okay.
But yeah, so the three of them are coyotes. She goes to the, and so she needs money, she needs a job, no one's buying her demo tapes. She hasn't got her sweet iMac yet.
Oh my god! we're gonna do, like, a specific section of just what was a very 2000 thing at the end of this.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I need to unpack.
Okay.
I have a list.
We'll get to it. Oh, I'm super excited. I'm super excited for your list.
So great.
But yeah, she goes to the bar to try and get a job, and Maria Bello is there.
She's always been a BAMF.
I super dig Maria Bello. I feel like she was not... I feel like she was not served well by this movie. I feel like she's better than this movie.
She is, but she gave it what she could.
Absolutely.
Like, she filled the role, even though it was much smaller than what she can do.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But she's the woman who owns the bar Coyote Ugly.
Yeah.
Violet impresses her by being like, hey man, I've had a real hard week, and if you're just a waitress on a power trip and not the owner of this place, I need to know. And that's the kind of sass that gets you a job. Yeah. Kid, you got the goods.
She does got the goods.
So she's gonna get hired for one night, and then she gets fired and rehired immediately.
Yeah, because she was terrible at dancing and doing the bar stuff because she has literally no training behind the bar. Don't put people behind bars. But then she stops a fight between two guys by literally giving them $10. So it obviously wasn't that important.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that's all I wrote. Fired, rehired. Okay. And so Maria Bello's character is just like, wait a second, lady. All right. Do it again. Like, you got a second audition. And I'm like, what is this?
You got a second audition. I'm going to send someone to your house to take you shopping for clothes.
Yes. So we got a shopping montage.
We got a shopping montage. Two. Unbelievable.
Again.
The third time Unbelievable is played in this movie. What is going on?
And that's why it's the winner for the movie's theme song, because it's played thrice and not twice like the other song.
Not the Leah and Rhyme song?
Oh. Well, no.
Not the...
The Moonlight one?
Yeah.
I was thinking of the one at the very, very beginning. That was played twice.
That's true. That was played twice. I Will Survive was played twice. Also, I skipped over something that I felt was very important, which is the first scene of the movie. Two middle-aged Italian dudes are talking about eating too much food while Sugar Ray plays in the background.
Yes! Yes!
Welcome to Coyote Ugly, baby!
This is what you're gonna get.
It's so weird.
I know.
Oh, boy. Wow, we just jumping all around. Okay, but, and so,
yeah,
they go shopping, there's a crazy montage, and then a super creepy, and this is something I want to ask you about. There's a super creepy silhouette scene where, like, she's clearly standing in her bra, and then the lights cast behind her, and then she puts on her shirt, and then the camera moves to see her, then she goes to the bar. Also, she's being billed as the nun from New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
That's her character.
The nun who was also a kindergarten teacher.
Yep.
And I'm just like, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of layers.
There's a lot of layers.
And there's that entire shot, I was like, okay.
Oh, that shot was really weird.
Like, it didn't feel right to be in the movie at all. Because, like, There's some shots that are just, like, a little saucy, but this one felt like, and then we literally pan up her what looks like to be naked body.
Yeah, there were a couple of shots, there were a couple of moments in that movie. That was one of the big ones.
Yeah.
There was another thing where she was kind of just, like, getting into her pants at one point, and you saw her very 90s white thong underwear.
Oh, yeah, that scene where she was literally on the phone with her dad.
With her dad! She's on the phone with her dad!
Changing.
Which, don't get me wrong.
Look, it happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But not when you as a viewer are watching. Mm-hmm. That takes on a whole other level.
Absolutely.
So it was very, like, she was changing her shirt and then, like, the pants thing. And then later in it's pre-sex scene, but it was very, very, like, look at all of my matching panties.
Yeah.
So, like, there was a lot of, like, specific shots of, like, the hip area.
Yeah, the hip area and the, like, there was a scene where I'm just like, why are you in your bra right now? It doesn't, like, and don't get me wrong, you can take your shirt off if you want, but it just didn't seem to make sense for what was going on in the movie.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering, so it's a woman who wrote the script.
Yeah.
And a dude who directed it. But it's also produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. Mm. And I'm wondering if that kind of skeezy stuff is his producing influence on the movie.
Maybe.
Because I can't, like, Jerry Bruckheimer might have been a real hands-off producer, but that doesn't strike me as who Jerry Bruckheimer was.
Yeah, I would assume he was more a hands-on producer.
I didn't even like predict that. That's a good one. Possibly Bruckheimer. Bruckheimer was a, like,
yeah.
I remember reading, like, articles in my, you know, in People magazine in the 90s where it's just like the bad boys of film, and Jerry Bruckheimer and the other guy, Silver? Anyway, Joel Silver and Jerry Bruckheimer.
Oh.
Right? And so it was just like, oh, okay. As soon as I saw Jerry Bruckheimer, I was like, ooh, this is a weird choice to produce this movie. And I'm wondering if that kind of stuff and the frenetic camera movements and the weird cameos. Why is Johnny Knoxville in this movie? Why is Michael Bay in this movie?
He's a photographer from Boys.
Why is Michael Bay in the movie?
Literally all of the cameos were the worst kind of cameos, because it was like, scene, 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 scene. Hey, look, it's this guy. Scene, 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 scene. Like, there's no reason.
The Johnny Knoxville one was the worst because there was actually space around those two dudes. Mm-hmm. And it was like they'd hung a spotlight and, like, taped off an area that no one could stand in other than Johnny Knoxville and the other guy who I assume was important in 2000.
Well, I didn't recognize him, but he got more lines.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So weird.
I'll have to look up the IMDb stuff, because I have no idea. Gosh, where are we?
I was curious, because the thing was the Bruckheimer stuff, and then I was talking with someone before we watched the movie.
Right.
And they said I said, I never watched it in the 2000s because I was 21 and I kind of bought into a lot of stuff that I don't buy into now. And I was like, oh, that's a girl movie for girls. And their impression was that, oh, that is a movie for guys. That's a movie for guys to go watch and see all the naked ladies. Or not the naked ladies, but all the sexy ladies dancing on the bar.
Ladies.
And I was like, oh, I assumed that, no, I assumed it was a girl movie and you assumed it was a guy movie.
Yeah. And from where I was in like, God, what was I? Probably like 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
I got the whole like, you know, the slut shaming side of things where there was no way that the circle around me was going to see it as like empowering or anything. So I was just like, oh, okay, I probably won't like this. Like, see, I probably would have enjoyed it back then. Like, it's not a great movie, but I think I would have enjoyed it. And it might have been fun to watch. And it, honestly, tonight was still really fun.
It was fun.
In our own special ways of watching movies 20 years too late.
Yeah.
But I definitely know why I didn't watch it for so long.
Mm.
And it's because we were lied to by society.
Right. But when...
Yeah.
Was your impression of that movie, like, if we're just going to, like, leave the society thing out just for this question.
Okay.
Was your impression that it was a movie for women, or was it your impression that it was a movie for men?
It was trying to be both and failing at
both. Oh, so even before you watched it, that was your impression.
Oh, no, tonight.
No, but before you watched it,
oh.
What was your impression? Maybe you didn't have one, but it was just interesting that we saw, like, me and that other person... It was a woman. But me and that other person, we had seen all the same trailers and we'd seen all the same stuff and we took two completely different perspectives on it.
I probably thought it was for guys.
Okay.
Like, because it was women dancing at a bar and it was more adult and it's probably seemed very male gazey even before I knew the term.
Fair.
But tonight I realized that they were trying to do both because it was that uncomfortable middle point between empowering and
exploitative almost?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was both, which is so weird.
And I'd read a few reviews just because I wanted to see what the reaction at the time was.
Oh.
And most of the reviews were, it's fake empowerment.
Okay,
it's empty empowerment. It's not really empowerment. It's the illusion of empowerment. And again, this is also almost 2-decade-old reviews, mostly dudes reviewing this movie. But I don't necessarily disagree with that because of the way it's filmed. I feel like if it was filmed differently, it could have been, I mean, take out, like all of the guys who shame her for dancing at the Coyote Ugly eventually realize that they were wrong to do so.
Yes.
And also dance at the Coyote Ugly. And I feel like if it was filmed less exploitatively, it could have been much more empowering. And I think that's probably what that screenwriter was trying to do with it.
I think so, because a lot of times, like, I could definitely see, like, say there's, like, a remake this year. There
the 20th anniversary of Coyote Ugly. Let's remake it.
All right. Let's write Jerry Bruckheimer, see if he's interested. I don't know. So it would be very different because of this, how society has grown and changed. But I definitely would see, like, a more focus on how it is empowering and how the women are all taking control of their lives, because you do actually have some good messages here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is kind of buried under a rom-com kind of feel. It's not, I know.
I know, you're not wrong.
It has the tropes. It has a circle, like, camera kiss, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, it's a romance. This movie's a romance.
It's a romance, but it shouldn't be. It should not be about Violet and Kevin. It should be about her realizing this group of women takes charge of their lives and not just, I cannot remember what Maria Bello's character's name is.
I'll look it up.
But she owns a business and a successful one at that. And she's owned it since like day one. She says in the end of the movie that she was a coyote earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can, if they had dug into that side of, you know, how Tyra Banks' character was making money so she could go to law school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's not like, oh, you have to make money to get away from this bad world. You make this money. It's a job. It's it's empowering and you get to have fun. But then you get to go live your dreams. And if it's outside of this world, fine. But if it's not, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I feel like it's Lil. Maria Bella's character is Lil.
Okay.
And I feel like there is no judgment. Tyra has no judgment, or whatever Tyra's character's name is, has no judgment of Lil.
Yeah.
And like, this is a place, like, she's like, yeah, I'm aware. This is the kind of bar I run, but it's the place that I wanted to do. This a lot of this is about your dreams, right? Like, this whole movie is about living your dreams. What's Kevin's dream? To live on his own.
Yeah.
And not be, you know, tied down and like, be his own person. What's Violet's dreams? What's Lil's dreams? What was Violet's mom's dreams? Right? Yeah, like, it's all about what your dreams are. And I feel like they used the romance at a romance story as a structure to talk about that. Whether that was the right choice, I don't know. I feel like we can't say. I would really like just to read the script. Also, fun fact, Kevin Smith did a rewrite on this, and they did a version of it, and they kept some of his stuff, but ultimately, like, yeah, his script was way too vulgar and didn't have enough romance in it, and there wasn't enough connection between the Kevin and Violet characters, so they didn't use his script.
Oh my god.
And I was just like, I mean, that would be an interesting script to read, too. Interesting.
That is one word for it. You could not pay me to read that script.
Again, but like, what would a Kevin Smith Coyote Ugly script be? I have no idea what it would be.
It would be grotesque and have dick jokes.
Possibly. He also wrote a Superman script that didn't have dick jokes in it, so
I
like,
don't know. I mean, I just honestly think he's a one-note guy. I think that he absolutely stopped maturing at like 14 and he's just still there.
For sure. Kevin Smith aside, I like early Kevin Smith for what they are. Mm-hmm. Post even Dogma, I'm just like I watched Jersey Girl for the first time a couple years ago and I went, whoa, what are you doing? Like, that was the point where I was like, because I'd skipped it because I'd heard it was bad. I saw Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I saw Clerks 2, and I was just like, okay, those are fine. But I'd skipped Jersey Girl, and I went, oh, this is a dude who cares so much about his new little girl, and it's changed his life completely. And he wants to write something really meaningful about it and can't do it. Like, just does not have the ability to do that. And it's sad. It's sad to watch this movie. And I understand how problematic Mallrats is.
Uh-huh.
I still laugh my butt off at that movie because of the ridiculous stunts and the ridiculous situation. And why don't I get to see the sailboat? And the Love Has No Fury, or Hell Hath No Fury, like a woman scorned for Sega. Nobody wants Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Like, that movie, much like the 2000s, is burned onto my brain. Yeah, and I get it. Not great now. And I would never recommend anyone see Mallrats. I am not recommending anybody see Mallrats. But yeah, it is a thing to me. So just to like go, I don't think you could do a good job of a Coyote Ugly script, but I would be very interested in seeing what it was. I'd also be really interested in seeing what the script was outside of all of this other stuff that's happening in Coyote Ugly. Anyway, that was a tangent. We should get back a little bit because I want to talk about a couple of other scenes.
All right. So are you going to talk about the next scene?
Why don't you? I've been rambling a lot.
Well, I went from Unbelievable as the theme song of the movie to Yep, She's Selling Him. So
Yeah.
So he walks into the bar and like 5 minutes later, she's like, all right, I need to make $250 for reasons and I'm going to sell you to the ladies.
That's right.
And so Kevin needs to get up on the bar and he does this weird nipple thing, which we will never talk about because it should be shamed. That's the only thing that should be shamed in this movie is Kevin doing a nipple thing.
Oh, boy.
And so there's like 30-something, 40-something business women like shaking dollar bills. Yeah. And I was like, all right, okay, equal opportunity. Like,
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, Coyote Ugly before has always been the women dancing for the men. And I really like that bit where she was like, cool, this guy, I'm going to sell this guy for money at Coyote Ugly, and he's going to dance on the bar. I was like, oh, legit, that's great. Yeah. And good dancer, sexy dude, I was 100% down for that scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's the only reason, like, it really softened itself is because there were the occasional, like, gratuitous man shot, and it wasn't just like, look at the ladies, right? Mm. Like, there was the Kevin striptease, and then later in the post-sex scene, there was, like, this very, like, hip almost bone. Uncomfortable...
Hip bone shot.
Hip bone, which you never see of men. You don't see men's hips.
Very
because
rarely.
In movies, men don't have hips.
Well, yeah, I guess.
No. I'm making an exaggeration.
I was just like, when you said men don't have hips, I just pictured Daniel Craig stepping out of the ocean in Casino Royale. Right. I was like, Daniel Craig has hips.
See? But how often do you see that?
Not very often, right.
And I like that they proved he had hips by having him dance.
There you go. Yeah, that dance scene was fun. Caitlin Olsen from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and the Dearly Departed The Mick, a show that I very much liked, is yelling. She's one of the business ladies who's had a hard day, and she's come to the Coyote Ugly, I guess? Because that's where that's where divorced businesswomen with three kids go?
Oh, yeah.
Remember? That's where he goes home with.
So, so she wins, and then I guess they have some kind of date. It's not talked about. And then, later in, I assume, the same evening. I'm not sure of
the
timeline.
Yeah, because the bar's closed down, so I would imagine they've gone out, and then she's gone home to the kids, and they're not done, so he goes to meet her out.
Yeah, so Violet comes out of work, and Kevin immediately starts telling her this woman's life story, and he gets halfway through before I realize what he's even doing, and I'm just like, okay. It was weird. And so that happened. What is next?
This was her selling him was them getting even for him tricking her.
Yes.
And then he was like, cool, now you need to do something for me, and then we'll be even. I'm like, no, you're even now.
You're right tricking now, her.
You're even. I feel like I'm gonna throw out a real weird curveball to you, and I'm gonna see how you approach it. I feel like given two different actors, all of their weird stuff would have been way better because they would have played it more tongue in cheek.
Maybe.
Like all of that, like that stuff that was like, oh, this is almost like problematic, weird, stalky stuff. I feel like with two different actors who actually had chemistry, those lines bouncing back and forth would have been playful, and they didn't seem playful.
They were playing it too straight. Both
too romantic.
And they were just like, okay, well, we know how the romance thing works, but you also have to joke, you know, if you're going to. Because, like, meeting someone and starting to date someone, like, no matter what you do, there are going to be some weird stalky bits. And there's, like, but in that relationship, if it's okay with you, because, like, if you're saying something really stupid that someone walking by would be like, what? But it's like, she's like, no, I'm consenting to this. He's super weird, but I kind of like him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and vice versa. And that's the problem I have with watching some movies is because you're the outside viewer and you're just like, this is weird. But it works for them, and it has to.
Yeah. And I think, again, one of the reasons it would be interesting just to read the script and see how lies on the page.
Yeah, and see if there are any weird deleted scenes that would explain the cat, because she did not have a cat at home. I have so many problems with the cat. I love cats.
It's a stray cat.
But it came in, and she said nothing about it, and her friend was like, cool, you have a cat. No, like, she didn't say anything. Mm. I have so many issues.
Fair enough. So then they go out for a date, goes to a place where he seems to know a lot of dudes, gives some fist bumps, orders four regulars, and gets a brown paper bag with some apparent contraband, but it's actually Amazing Spider-Man 129, the first appearance of the Punisher, the holy grail of comic books. And you got me and Danica on the couch going like, listen, do you want to talk about this? Because we could talk about this.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the last thing I need right now is to have, like, a cute romantic lead be like, I like comic books. Look at me. I know this one comic book. And I'm like, oh, honey. Okay, let's break this down.
I feel like it's just like, that is not the... I mean, maybe, and then again, in the 2000s, that's very different.
Yeah.
But, like, the dude who's super down for, like, who thinks the first appearance of the Punisher is the holy grail of comic books, I'm like, oh, boy, you have just shown your hand, man.
That's a red flag.
That's a red flag.
For me and for, it should be a lot of women, honestly. Someone says, blah, 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 Punisher, I go, I'm out.
And this is coming from a dude who actually likes some Punisher stories. The first appearance
Becky
of the Punisher.
Becky Cloonan or die. Nobody else.
All right. Well, we have definitely disagreements about that.
I know.
Because Garth Ennis's Punisher run affected me so badly that I finished a trade and immediately went on to Kiva to find a woman in Eastern Europe to donate money to.
Oh my God. What did Ennis do to you? Where he touched you.
It's in The Slavers. I think that's the fifth issue of Punisher Max. It's just like, like Frank stumbling across like a human trafficking ring of Eastern European women. And like, he they're treated so badly. So then it's easy for Frank to take down the people who are being so mean to these women. Yeah. But it just affected me so hard. I was like, I need to donate money to a woman in need right now.
Well, that's the best thing anyone ever did after reading an Ennis comic. And probably
I have differing opinions. Can we agree to disagree?
Yes, because I still want us to be friends after this.
That was the sound of shaking hands, friends.
Yeah. No, we've gone through worse. Don't worry.
100%.
All right.
So yeah, so he...
So yeah, so he reads comic books, there's no chemistry. And then, so we're back to the bar.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are not just gentlemen and business ladies. There are straight up sailors.
Oh,
and
boy, like, the sailors.
Army dudes. And I thought that was a very pointed set scene that they were like, you know what? We're going to have a fight scene. And guess what we're going to do? We're going to shame the Army and the Navy because they're the problem.
Yeah. So there's it's already overcrowded.
Yeah.
You got dudes on shore leave. And... things escalate, get out of hand, there's a fight going on, nobody can stop it, but Maria Bello puts on a song and says, sing, sing, Violet, and the power of Violet's voice, because I don't know if we've mentioned why Violet is in New York, but she is here to be a songwriter.
She's here to be a songwriter, but not a singer,
no,
because
she can't
has
sing
stage
her own
fright.
Songs. Yeah.
But just, this is fine.
Just like her mom.
Ah.
But yeah. So she can sing somebody else's song, and the power of her voice
calms
the whole crowd.
Like little babies.
Oh, boy. But then this is really one of the biggest parts of the movie, is that she's moved to New York to be a songwriter. We know she can sing. She can't sing her own songs in public. And Kevin, God bless Kevin, actually is like, no, this is important to you. Mm-hmm. You should do it. And is actively encouraging her to follow her dreams. And I'm like, you know what? As bad a time as we give Kevin, that's a good thing. And Kevin does a really sweet thing where he invites her to his crazy loft apartment.
It is filled to the rafters with weird stuff. Like, he got it all out of dumpsters.
I want to go to there and then live in it. I would clean it up a little bit, but there's a lot of cool stuff in there.
I feel like if it was like an Airbnb situation or like a B&B where you just kind of like pretend you lived in a loft space in New York, like that would be neat.
Yeah.
I did actually, what we should have done also is paused on his comic collection.
Oh,
I was very curious about that because it was a lot of really old stuff that like I hadn't even heard of.
There was an old war comic book that was pretty front and center for a point. It was weird. But yeah, he goes, takes her to his apartment. And says, you need to sing. And this whole, they've been talking about this whole time. He's like, it's important. How can we get you to sing? How can we get you to sing? And he finally takes her to his loft apartment and sets up all like these like famous celebrity cardboard standees. And like, these are your biggest fans. They're here. They want you to sing. And I was like, oh, Kevin, you kind of winning me over with this dude. And I was like, I turned to Danica and said, oh, that's actually really sweet. And then things got weird.
Okay. So we were focusing on the scene and it still lost us.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, you want to play? And she's like, I can't. I have to be nervous or you have to be nervous? I'm
it
not
makes
sure.
Me, is it, it makes me nervous? What does being nervous feel like? Like, is that what's going on?
I'm not sure. But she starts like... feeling up the cardboard standees and also stripping. And, like, he's kind of like, all right, I like where this is going. I don't see how this is making you sing. And she's like, it doesn't matter. I'm just like, why is this happening?
So she takes off purple garment after purple garment.
And let me tell you, everything on her body is the same color of purple, even her bra and her panties.
Lavender, like,
yeah.
Weird lavender. So she, so he comes on to him. They have a, they make love in amongst the standees.
They did knock a couple over, so it was definitely, they got to the bed eventually.
Absolutely, which is, and this is where the hips come in.
The yes, the hip shot, the, you know.
And then she still can't sing in public, and then, I don't know, this is kind of when the movie starts losing me, to be perfectly honest.
I know, so she's, like, in a blanket, and he's, like, and then he still has to turn the lights off in his apartment for her to sing. And so this is still a problem, even after all the sex, because we thought it was gonna solve things?
Yeah, like, we've been intimate, you should be able to...
Yeah.
Sing, right?
She's but like, I guess girl, no.
Still can't do it.
Oh my god.
We've left so many things out. We've left out the plagiarizing and culturally appropriating the hip hop dude. Because she plays music. She can't play music in her apartment because she has to record it on a tape recorder. Because this is 2000.
Yeah.
And her New York apartment's so noisy, she has to go up on the roof and play on the roof. So there's three scenes that are like, this is now a music video where she's gonna play Diane Warren songs.
Yeah.
And in one of the things, she sees across the street a dude in I guess it's another studio apartment, open window, dude doing hip-hop music, and she likes the groove and the beat, so then she plagiarizes it and makes it her own song. What are you doing?
No, it was very bad.
But that was the other dance scene I was thinking of.
Where he was dancing.
He was dancing. That's the Both other dance one. Scenes involved dudes. I guess the third one also would be John Goodman's at the end.
Counts.
Counts.
So three or four, depending on if you or me.
That's right.
So then we start, then things are getting good, and her life is really good, and so we go through a montage of her being successful at work, and we find out the Coyotes have a baseball team.
Oh, a baseball team?
For 5 seconds, and I don't understand why they included it, but I'm glad they did. And the blonde, I've already forgot her name, just starts stripping on the mound.
She takes her top off, and I gotta say, I'm a man. I enjoyed the fact that there was a lady in without her shirt on. And now that I know that she's 18, I feel bad about that.
She was, don't worry, she was legal. But she was so gross.
18.
I know. Look at it this way. Her bra was the same color as her top and everything matched.
It was really cute.
The color coordination in this movie is top notch.
Like gray, a gray bra with like the little.
It was like, had like a ribbon.
Yeah,
or
the
something.
Ribbons. It was really cute. Anyway.
The ribbon matched the t-shirt.
Yeah.
Anyway, why is there a baseball team? No, we'll never know.
Montages.
Right, because
we need more montages. They need to play Unbelievable 3 times.
I know, right? Okay, so it's getting too good.
Yeah,
but
things gotta
guess
get bad.
What? That photographer from The Voice, who is totally not Michael Bay, it's Michael Bay. Put her picture in the paper, and her dad sees, and then he comes down, and he's like, girl, what are you doing? I am ashamed.
Ugly.
Yeah, he sees her dancing and
she, well he sees her being doused with pitcher after pitcher of water.
I was being nice. Anyway, and he's just like, girl, I am ashamed of you, and she's like, daddy, no. And so there's a thing, there's a rift. There's and then a... I just wrote oh Kevin, so I don't remember what
Kevin I was. Also wrote oh Kevin. Oh, that was very loud. I'm sorry, listeners.
No, I don't know what Kevin did. I don't remember. But the next comment was, don't slut shame her, Kevin. So that was probably after that.
I, in fact, wrote, come on, Kevin. And you wrote, oh, Kevin. But it was their fight where he comes, where he gets her a gig.
Right.
He sold his Spider-Man comic. He gives the Spider-Man comic to the dude. He gets her a gig. She bails on the gig. And that was a thing like where it's like she could have left, but Maria Bello says, if you wanted to have left, you would have been gone by now. She calls him and says, you're not coming. He's mad. He comes to the Coyote Ugly, gets in a fight. She's broken the rules because boyfriends aren't allowed to the Coyote Ugly.
Exactly. And now both men in her life are pissed at her.
Mm-hmm. And they have a fight where, and I think they both have a point. And again, if I feel like if we were more invested in their relationship, that would have worked really well. But like, he's like, you can't just give up on this. The Coyote Ugly is an easy way out. It's a way for you to not live your dream. Your dream was to come here and be a songwriter, and this is what you're doing. And then we find out, like, hey, man, like, I don't know anything about you. What do you have the right to tell me about how to live my life? And then he's like, I was an orphan in Australia. I came here. I'm working 4 jobs. This is my dream. She's like, and I thought that was the end of it. And then she comes back at him again. I was just like, this is an actual legit fight that has reasons to happen and consequences.
I'll give him that. Mm-hmm. Like, the one thing they were missing was chemistry, but their relationship was good. It's just, it should have been better.
Yeah.
I still think it's a giant red flag, no matter how bad your childhood is, to tell your girlfriend nothing for months.
I know, but it's like, but then how would you know he's damaged?
Ugh.
So she goes back, goes back home, her friend's getting married.
Oh, yeah, Melanie Lynskey's getting married to the other guy from... he was another person that we know.
Yeah, Michael Weston, I think, is the name of the actor.
Maybe.
John Goodman's at the
dance.
At the wedding, she dances with her dad at her friend's wedding. We have not even remotely talked about how incapable John Goodman is of taking care of himself in this movie.
Oh my God.
To come home and wash his do his laundry. He can't wear socks.
Like, his wife has been dead for 5 years. Figure your shit out. I'm sorry that I swore. I'm so sorry.
Oh, this is... that will get bleeped. This is a very adults... This is an adults podcast.
I'm just like... Like, John Goodman, great guy. Mm-hmm. This character, useless piece of trash.
Not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they have a thing. They dance. He says, I never thought I'd be disappointed in you, but that was... Or ashamed of you, one of the two?
He was ashamed.
I was ashamed of you. And then later that night, he gets hit by a car, has to go to the hospital, and that's when we stop taking notes, but I bet we could still finish this movie.
Yes, I will say that I thought the easier way out, which they didn't do, was for him to have a heart attack.
I did too, especially because they were really leading you through it. Like, you gotta eat them Lean Cuisines, you gotta eat them egg whites, stop eating the KFC and the McDonald's.
And then when they were like, he's in the hospital, I was like, oh no. And then it was a car, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it kind of blew my mind a little. So... She goes to see him, and her best friend shows up in her wedding dress, which, respect. That is what a best friend does.
That was legit. I liked the line, he's been in my family for 5 minutes, you've been in my family for my whole life. It's like, that was a good line. I'll take that. And then, I don't know, she's struggling. She's working at... Oh, yeah, because that's basically the end of her time at the Coyote Ugly, right?
Yeah,
like, she's not at the Coyote Ugly anymore.
Yeah, because the whole boyfriend thing and, like, Lil, like, fires her or she leaves, whichever. Like, all of the good stuff that was happening is just chopped down.
And I interpreted, the next day was... I have no idea how time works in this movie. I have no idea how long this movie took place over.
No.
But it seemed to me that not too long after she broke the rules at the Coyote Ugly, her dad got hurt and she... kind of was trying to take care of him. So I assume that is what kind of made her leave the Coyote Ugly. But then there were some really nice scenes of, oh, now we're putting your life back together. And we had the nice scene where John Goodman's like, hey, the redheaded nurse lady gave me some Old Spice. And also, your mom stopped living her dream because of me. And I don't want you to do that. You're not allowed to move back home and take care of me. I thought that scene was real good. And then Maria Bello comes to the new bar where she's working.
Yeah, and that was really nice. And she straight up says, like, you can come back anytime. And then Violet goes, no, I'm moving on. And I thought it was really respectful that Lil basically said, yeah, like, I knew you weren't a lifer, but with respect.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's kind of getting her life back together. And then...
She buys the Mac.
Yeah, she had enough money to buy the Mac, which is another... whole 2000s thing. Delightful. And with that weird, like, keyboard program, it looked so bad, and I love it. Yeah, so she's songwriting again. She's working, like, kind of a day job. So there's, like, she has time to do shows. Mm-hmm. And then...
She's burning CDs on her new Mac. It's not just tapes.
Right.
This is professional quality.
The upgrade.
Burned CDs.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there's always the phone tag between her and Kevin, and then she sees Kevin letting a woman into his apartment, and she thinks he's cheating on her, so there's that going on. But finally, the Bowery Ballroom calls her and was like, cool, we liked your tape, come and just play a set at the Bowery Ballroom. I'm like, that is not how any of this works, but okay, movie, let's see what you're gonna do.
We're in a movie. I think that she sent in the CD, like, as just like a... Just send us your stuff and we'll listen to it. And they did.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. And then so she has her first, like, big show. And she's very excited. And
the same place that Eve 6 and Pennywise play at.
Oh, my God.
And Vertical Horizon.
Oh, my God.
We had to go back so Danica could take a picture of the bill.
I would have been excited with at least half of this show. Because I don't...
Well, I don't think it's a show. I think it's like, these are all the days, like, this day is this day, this day is this day.
Well, that makes actually more sense. I got too excited and I talked really fast. Yeah, no, like, it's, I don't even know, half of those bands, I was like, what?
What was the one that you made me listen to? It was Vertical Horizon and then...
Joy Drop,
yeah. Danica played me some 2000s music.
Sometimes Want to Die was like my jam, and not because I wanted to die, but because it was amazing.
Yeah, it's got Tommy Lee in it. In the video.
Well, it's Tommy Records, so he is there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. But yeah, we're coming to the end. She's got the gig in the Bowery Ballroom.
Yeah.
John Goodman and Emily Levinsky are coming. She has some stage fright. She pulls a Yui on the turnpike.
Oh my gosh, she could have died. And then he straight up goes, I was just in a car accident. Why are you doing this? And I looked at Devin and I said, nobody should have let her drive. She is the worst person to have driven.
Mm-hmm.
She is nervous. Don't make her drive. It should have been Melanie Linsky's character. But
100%.
I understand why they did that.
Yeah.
And then, like, the crossing guard people did something called a 1-2-3, which I hope is a real thing.
Oh, yeah. The toll booth.
Toll booth, yeah. And they, like, turned and flicked off the lights like a kindergarten teacher a couple times. Mm-hmm. But it was really sweet. So they arrive at the place, and then she gets up on stage, and, like, it sound they did the movie editing where it sounds like she just showed up when they announced, and that's not true.
Yeah. Intercutting, the coyotes are shutting down the bar early so they can all go support her. Lil somehow got Kevin's number and told him to look, in the Village Voice so that he will be there.
You know what? It was the year 2000. She probably looked in a phone book.
In a phone book! Yeah, you're probably right.
Oh, I'm so excited.
She found his landline number in the phone book. Oh, 2000. Were we ever so young?
That's so beautiful.
So beautiful. So, yeah, she's at the Bowery Ballroom. The house band knows all the music. And then she gets stage fright and she can't do it. And everyone's watching her. And then I guess Kevin turns the power off
of the whole place. And then is suddenly in the audience like a magician.
And teleports into the middle of the audience. And then she starts singing on the amplified microphone. And then the electric instruments start playing and the lights come up. And I was like, is he a ghost?
The secret was that he was dead all along.
That scene was weird. Yeah. That scene was weirder than the scene where she stripped amongst the cardboard cutouts, which was the weirdest scene to date.
Oh, boy. So it ends happy because she starts to sing Can't Fight the Moonlight, which we all know from Leon Rimes because she did the songs for this movie. So everyone's just like, me. And it was a good show, and then they have, like, a big ol' celebration at Coyote Ugly.
3 months later.
Right. That was the only timeline. Mm-hmm. 3 months later, because, Leanne Rimes, who plays herself in the movie, has recorded her song, Can't Fight the Moonlight, and is now a hit single!
And so Leanne Rimes is at the Coyote Ugly, performing her song along with That's a weird turn, movie.
Yeah.
It's a weird turn. And then it ends with John Goodman and his redheaded nurse lady at the bar at the Coyote Ugly, and then she auctions off John Goodman.
Yes.
And so John Goodman and Tyra Banks have this weird slap dance thing.
There were so many actor combinations at the end. I was happening? And
the 18-year-old ballet dancer rides a piggyback around the stage. Stage. I'm saying stage. It's a bar.
It's a bar.
Yeah.
So that's in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. It's an hour. We've been talking an hour about this movie. Oh, boy.
It is a treasure trove.
Oh, yes. Please. What are the treasure troves of 2000?
Oh, my God.
I need your list real bad.
All right. So you did mention Sugar Ray, straight up. If you need to know if it's between 1998 and 2000, play some Sugar Ray.
Sugar Ray.
And this is completely, I'm going to admit a mistake that I made to Devin on air. The band that I thought was Lifehouse was The Calling.
Oh, The Calling.
So
yes,
different.
Yes, 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 yes.
And I liked both of them, and I had like multiple Lifehouse albums, so there is no excuse for what I have done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
I feel like you have publicly shamed yourself enough.
Thank you. Oh, man. I didn't, like, there's so much that I didn't write. And, like, the Mac computer, like, the pastels. But the very specific kind of pastel that you don't, you know... It's not the 80s pastel. It's like 2000 had their very specific kind. There were like tank tops and there were cap sleeves and there were that.
Is that what it's called? Cap sleeves? Because like that's the thing where you're wearing the spaghetti strap top. The thing that she was taking off. Violet thing that she was taking off.
That's a shrug.
A shrug. Yeah. Like the shrug. The shrug and spaghetti strap thing. I was like very 2000s. Very 2000s.
Oh. It's my candy and like it's just so
$4 beers being expensive.
Oh, they're so cute. Little do they know in the future. Like it's just little things that
Maria Bello's sunglasses, her heart-shaped sunglasses?
Yeah, like, and they were pink.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, everyone who was definitely not blonde being blonde, like, the hair dye and the long, long, long hair. Everyone had long hair.
And all of their outfits showed belly button, of them, except Maria Bello.
A huge trend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, if you were under 25, where's your belly button?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it hadn't?
Get it out, girls.
Yeah. And also, get out the girls. No. Oh, right. And those, like, half shirts with the tie behind them Michelle Monaghan or whatever was wearing, like, all over. And the pleather pants. And, like, I had a few of those half shirts. And I straight up, like, wore them in high school. So I know what's up. They were weirdly comfortable. Good in the summer. Like, really good.
There you go.
I was, like, free air conditioning.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway, I could go on. But, like, it's just... Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I think at some point I'm going to watch it just to look at all the behind the scenes stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not behind the scenes, like in the scenes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to look at what comics were in that guy's house.
I do.
I was looking through my notes to see if there was anything that I wanted to mention that we hadn't mentioned. My two things that we hadn't mentioned were, first of all, Diane Warren wrote those songs. The, like, possibly the most important pop songwriter of the past 50 years. I actually liked most of the songs, but every time Piper Perabo is performing any of Diane Warren's songs, she is up on the roof. In a music video, the cinematography totally changed.
Yeah.
In the sad one, she brings up a bunch of candles up to the roof, which I thought was just like a very, very 2000. And then the other thing was the name of the club that Kevin got her a spot in that she bailed on was the Elbow Room. And I loved the name of that bar very much. That was a good pun. I was very happy with it.
That's awesome.
Anything that we missed on your end?
No, I'm just trying to look, like, I'm kind of going through the IMDb trivia just to see if there's anything actually interesting.
There's not really.
It's mostly, like, this person auditioned, And it's really...
Here's the one really interesting thing that I thought. Jessica Simpson was originally offered the role of Violet.
Yeah.
And she turned it down because of the sex scene. And she didn't want to do a sex scene. And then they cut the sex scene from the movie. Most of the sex scene from the movie. Can you imagine Jessica Simpson?
I think it would have been worse.
Oh, I agree it would have been worse.
Apparently Piper Perabo used a body double for the sex scene.
There you go.
So, there's that. It's just...
No.
They tell you where Piedmont is. Oh, it's actually a small town in South, not North Dakota.
Spoiler alert.
It literally is in the spoilers area. Yeah. Why is...
Oh, because that's where Maria Bello's from?
It's so dumb.
IMDb.
Anyway, you know, just in case anybody was still confused about North and South Dakota... Glad I could clear that up for you. My foot is definitely asleep, so we definitely have to wrap this up.
Absolutely. We've talked way longer about this movie than I thought we were going to.
I honestly thought we were going to have a shorter episode.
Oh, me too. But apparently, we had a lot to say. So I guess final thoughts.
Yeah.
Would you recommend this movie to people who like movies?
No.
Would you recommend this movie to people who like dancing?
No.
No. Would you recommend... Who would you recommend this movie to?
Apparently my dumb husband.
We are disappointed in you.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't regret watching it.
No, and I think that if it came up, like, if I actually had cable and it was on television, I would probably sit down and, you know, watch the part of it that it was I caught.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would seek it out.
I feel like... I don't know. There are specific people in my life who, if I found out they hadn't seen Coyote Ugly, I'd be like, you should see Coyote Ugly. But I don't know if I could say, like, would you watch it to have a fun time at a bad movie? Maybe?
Yeah.
To see...
Well, I mean, like, it's almost not bad enough to be, like, laughable. It's trying so hard to be earnest that it's... Like,
it's not fun bad.
No, it's just kind of like, oh, that was something. That was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not good. It is a movie that we watched.
Yep.
And
I think that's what most people figured out 20 years ago.
Yeah. We were tricked. Hoodwinked.
Oh, I was going to say bojangled, but that's...
Bamboozled.
Bamboozled. That's... so different.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy. Well, thanks for listening, I guess. Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts?
I guess I just want to say to everyone who voted on the Twitter poll, thank you.
Yeah.
We got a lot of votes, and I did not expect that many people to care, but it's appreciated. Mm-hmm. And although we ended up here, I am thankful. And we may still do Magic Mike down the line. We'll see.
Oh, I feel like we have to.
Definitely more dancing in that one. But it won't be like, we're doing the next month, you know, it'll just be something else.
Yeah.
So as, you know, and we're always looking for suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can find me on Twitter at Danica Here, DanicaHere, and you can find...
Me on Twitter at Dr_Teeth. Like, you're like the Muppets. I got a high five from a dude at a beard store. He was like, are you a dentist? I was like, no, I just like the Muppets. He's like, nice. And he gave me a high five.
Nice. Well deserved.
There you go. And we have a WordPress site, which is sytycdanica.wordpress.com.
Nicely done. And then you can always find the hashtag sytycdanica.
You did it!
I did it! I finally remembered how to spell my name, why not do it at all.
There you go. So I miss sytycdanica. My favorite part. Yeah.
It's very hard. Very difficult. Anyway, so we'll talk to you next month, and thanks for listening.
Break a leg.
So You Think You Can Danica is recorded by Danica LeBlanc and Devin R. Bruce, and is produced by Devin R. Bruce and Danica LeBlanc. Our theme music is You Can Dance by Steve Combs, who has even more excellent pop music at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening!